Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. Your host, Colin Dams, is back with Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. How's it going, boys?
Just another day in America, man.
Yeah, basically.
It has been a very interesting week in general, with a lot of chaos happening, from natural disasters to police brutality. But
I think embarrassing might be a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely embarrassing in America.
Disheartening.
Yeah. We got wildfires, we got hurricanes, and then we got humans trying to top all that in terms of being just generally shitty. But in Manchester United news...
Oh, we're not even talking about Manchester United Twitter, because that's been a wildfire.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
Polly was talking earlier today about the necessity of a nuclear bomb news drop to try and just finally end Manchester United Twitter and put it out of its misery.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure which news story we were talking about now, because there's been so much going on.
It's not even its misery, but like I also sat around, and this summer and the last summer, I have done a lot of research on economics of football, the financials in football, how the transfer market works, all the things that go into, like, I have read countless books on anything economic, financial in global, but specifically English and European football, and all the things that go into it. And today I sat down and I thought about it, and all I said was, on the field, it is not hurting Manchester United that they don't get these deals done quickly. And economically, I wouldn't be surprised if there is an economic benefit to them waiting till the last moment or till the end to announce these transfers. And the reason is because we're suckers. There's just, I just saw a report that said United are interested or remain interested in Jack Grealish, but there's now been talks in the back room about where he would play in the team. And that's a the dumbest of dumb leaks. Like, that is if somebody's leaking that report, it's because someone wants Aston Villa to think, oh, United might walk away and you're going to end up having Grealish and getting relegated next year and not capitalizing on him when you could have, etc. But what it does is United's fan base is going to freak out about that news. They are going to tweet about it up the wazoo. And guess what's the most talked about team on Twitter then? Manchester United. And that helps the club in everything that they're trying to do. And when they put out a on this day Van Persie scored against Fulham tweet, and everybody goes, what the fuck? Chelsea are signing players and City are signing players, and we're doing on this day, that helps the club. And as long as it's not hurting the club to bring in these players late, driving all this stuff up, like, is probably more, it makes more economic sense than being like, yeah, right, we spent the 120 million on Jadon Sancho. And, because let's say United signed five players tomorrow. Like, what would we be tweeting about next week? Nothing. You know, the players would all be with their countries on international duty. So you get the social media hits that you're going to get anyway.
Polly, are you suggesting that Edward Ed is some sort of secret marketing social media genius?
How do you think he got to where he is? He's not dumb. I mean, you don't get to where Edward Ed is in life. Pre-Manchester United, you do not get to the position that he had at JP Morgan. That's where he was, right? JP Morgan?
I actually don't know.
I think it was JP Morgan. But whatever it was, you don't get to that position without being incredibly smart and having very good business sense. And what he has done on the commercial side at United, you don't do if you don't have good business sense and you're not incredibly smart. He is just not a football guy. You know, some people are football guys. Some people are basketball guys. He's a banking, money, business guy, not a football guy, and putting him in charge of the football aspect is just a terrible idea from the Glazers. But it's, you know, he's not dumb in the other world. You know, when we go onto his turf, he's pretty good in his turf. It's just that we put him in a job where he had to do, where he had to be on his turf and the other turf, and he is lost on the other turf.
Paul, do you think then that he has at least one or two deals actually finalized, and it's just, you know, waiting for when to release it, as opposed to, you know, kind of dragging his feet or balking at certain prices, as the media would suggest?
I think it's more likely than not they have at least one deal, like 96% of the way there. I think the Jadon Sancho deal is pretty much done. The personal terms have been agreed. The fee, they're bickering over the structure, but they're not even bickering that much anymore. Because at the end of the day, like, Borussia Dortmund aren't going to say yes to this deal until September. So it doesn't matter. Like, if United said, right, here's the 120 million, Dortmund would still be like, ew, like, maybe we could get some more if you're already offering 120 million. You know, they yeah. say this because, you know, Nathan and I discussed this last week. Even Bayern Munich are coming out and, like, criticizing them for basically being like, well, it's not, they basically said a couple weeks ago, it's not our fault we're so good. Like, the second best team in Germany keeps selling all their players. So Dortmund, they understand they're a selling club, but they don't want to just be a punching bag that gets bullied. They want to be like, we're a selling club, but we sell on our terms. So they're going to wait until the last minute. They're playing this game of, no, Jadon Sancho's in our plans. And there's a DFB Cup match the weekend that the Premier League starts. United aren't playing that weekend. There's a mm-hmm. round of German Cup fixtures. I bet you Jadon Sancho will be in the 11 for that game. And they're going to force him to hand in a transfer request, because when they do that, he has to give up his loyalty bonuses and everything. So that they save some money there. And at that point, the deal will go through very quickly. You know, they did the exact same thing with Ousmane Dembele. He played in the DFB Super Cup Saturday, went AWOL on Monday, was sold on Tuesday. He went to the Super Cup. He played in the Super Cup on Saturday when Dortmund were saying, no, he's on our team, and he's going to be on our team this season, when everyone knew all summer he was going to Barcelona. So mm-hmm. there's also the element of, you know, Dortmund have to, who knows what Dortmund's financial situation is. We have that report that says that they lost a lot of money because of COVID. So they probably need to sell him anyway. They also need to sell him because he wants to leave. And you look at players like Erling Haaland and Jude Bellingham, and if they don't sell these guys when they want to leave, then their entire pitch to these guys when they're trying to sign them as 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds goes out the window, because they tell these guys, you know, we will give you first team opportunities, and when you want to leave, we won't stand in your way.
And also, I think worth mentioning, you know, with the Champions League kind of fresh on people's minds and the whole Bayern squad cost versus PSG squad cost, one of the big kind of club getting burned by a player in the last decade was Robert Lewandowski waiting out his contract after Jurgen Klopp refused to sell him to Bayern Munich.
Right. So they're going to want to sell. There is also it. Not advantageous, but there's, you know, there is something to, with every week that goes by and we understand what kind of situation we're going to be in more and more. Like, the Bundesliga planned on having fans at the beginning of the season, and now the German government is basically saying that's not going to happen until 2020. So it's hard to know what, you know, we know now how much money we didn't make at the end of last season because of playing behind closed doors. We don't know how much money we are not going to make this season, because we don't know. Are we going to be letting fans in November, January, March? So, you know, we have plenty of analysts who are basically saying, if we can get fans in by game 8, then we will stand to make X amount of money. If we can get them in by game 14, it'll be Y. There's also talk of doing another year of the Champions League being one-off fixtures in the knockout rounds. That's less match day revenue if we have fans by then. It's less TV revenue mm-hmm. if we don't have fans by then. So we don't know how much money we're going to be bringing in, and neither do Borussia Dortmund. So, you know, this news that Germany as their government has basically said, no fans until January. That's good for United, because that means Dortmund have to be like, oh, well, we definitely need money here. But they're going to wait, because they want to be able to turn around to their fan base and to the other teams in the world and say, we sold on our terms. We only sold once United reached our asking price. Meanwhile, like, as soon as Sancho goes AWOL on Monday, that deal will be completed on Tuesday, because they basically have the framework of it completed already. And then the other deals, if United spend $100 million on Jadon Sancho, then Aston Villa will be like, well, you can't say that you're poor and that you've lost all this money because of COVID, because you just spent $100 million. So right now, when you're working on other deals and you're trying to be like, well, the market's just down in general, like, you don't want other teams to know we have made this deal for so much money.
Yeah. So United fans, basically the message is, don't panic just yet.
That's my message every morning on Twitter. I tweeted out today. I mean, look, Borussia Dortmund, Jadon Sancho started 4 of their 9 games post-lockdown, and they were only one of them was against a top half of the table team. They were against 15th place, 16th place, I think 17th place, and 9th place. They played 1st place, 3rd place, 7th place, 6th place, 6th place. He didn't start any of those games. Borussia Dortmund are planning for life after Jadon Sancho, and they have been for some time.
Yeah. And addressing the fans in stadiums news, I think it was announced earlier this week that at the Puskas Arena in Hungary, there will be a 30% capacity crowd for Bayern Munich versus Sevilla in the UEFA Super Cup. So I think the assumption there across the board in world football is kind of, you know, seeing how this works out, seeing what the stadium and stadium officials do to try and make it safe, what works and what doesn't work, and how that can be applied in the rest of European leagues, because, as you've mentioned, that match day revenue is pretty big, especially for some of the bigger clubs that bring in crowds like Manchester United do. So moving on, and we're going to talk a little bit more about transfers later, I think, but one of the big stories...
You're the host, you should know.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about transfers later, you just steer the conversation that way.
Right, but right now, the big story...
Anyways,
is Harry Maguire, and a lot of quotes coming out as we are recording this from his interview with the BBC. So I'm just going to read through a couple of these for anyone who might not know. But if you're listening to this podcast, I assume you like Manchester United enough to have followed the story, at least casually. Harry Maguire was arrested last Friday in Mykonos, Greece, and was charged with misdemeanor counts of assault, resisting arrest, and bribery. Police saying, you know, he's like, do you know who I am? I'm rich. I'm the captain of Manchester United. You can't arrest me. All that stuff. And Harry Maguire has very staunchly defended himself and said that that was not true. These quotes, you know, he's describing, it was horrible. It's not something I want to do again, and I don't wish to happen to anybody else. Obviously the situation has made it difficult for one of the biggest clubs in the world, so I regret putting the fans and the club through this, but I did nothing wrong. He says that the police, quote, hit me a lot on the legs. It wasn't on my mind, but I was in that much of a panic and fear and scared for my life. Maguire, when asked if he tried to bribe the police, he said no, for sure. As soon as I saw that statement, I thought it was ridiculous. He said he is not going to apologize, because that's something you do when you've done something wrong. And he is adamant in that he has done nothing wrong. So, Nathan, this is a story we kind of followed over the weekend, and at the Busby Babe, other than writing, you know, just kind of the news drop about it, we haven't really been sure what to say of it. And I think one of the biggest reasons why is because the Greek legal system moved pretty quickly in their processing and conviction of Harry Maguire, and the whole thing just kind of seems unclear even now.
Yeah, I don't know that we really truly know anything more than what we learned over the weekend. I mean, it's a he said, she said situation. It reminds me of the conversations that I had the first time I was preparing to travel abroad. People were telling me, like, hey, you know, go have a good time, but at the end of the day, like, you're in somebody else's country, don't be messing around, because you might not have the same protections that you would have elsewhere. But at the same time, it's such a different situation for a guy like Harry Maguire. Him and his big, dumb forehead are very recognizable. Anybody who's a football fan knows who Harry Maguire is. I mean, he's the captain of Manchester United. He is captain of the England squad too, right?
He is not. I think Jordan Henderson is still the captain. Harry Kane is.
Okay. Well, either way, Harry Maguire is still a prominent figure on the English national team that went to the semifinals in the World Cup. If you have any semblance of an idea of what's going on in football, you probably know who Harry Maguire is. So it's one of those situations where if you're, like, in the wrong place, you're just as likely to be targeted as you are to have a good time, which is unfortunate for, you know, famous people, and that probably is a huge explainer of why so many athletes like to go to Dubai now and Abu Dhabi and, you know, just that whole section of the world. I just saw this report. I think it was Goal TV added on Twitter where it was, why do athletes go to, you know, these countries specifically? It's because they go there and they're not bothered. And then they have all the, you know, the luxury that they can ever want on a vacation. Setting aside all the dark, nefarious things associated with why that is like that. But, and of course, we saw Aaron Wan-Bissaka do his vacation over there. Now he's got to quarantine for 14 days. I got to think Harry Maguire is going to have to quarantine too after spending a night in jail. But yeah, I just think that we probably haven't had everything come out yet. And I really hope it's not a Ryan Lochte situation. Like, I'd love to give Harry Maguire the benefit of the doubt, but I don't know. I just don't feel like we know anything. And it's like you want to trust the authorities, I think. I don't know what, like, the Greek police track record is. I know it's not great here in America, so I would be very apprehensive.
It's not great in Greece either. But Mykonos is not, I mean, it's not a place that's had, like, riots, I think, to the same level that the rest of Greece has had. From my understanding, an island where rich people go to party and get drunk.
Yeah. I have a couple friends who sounds like that's exactly
what happened, is you had a situation where people were looking to do bad things and get money off of rich people. So that's a good place to go is Mykonos, because you're going to find rich people. And there are so many conflicting stories. One of which was that, you know, someone injected his sister with something. And you know, that's, if that is the case and he, you know, started punching people, kudos to him. Like, you protect your friends and you protect your family. And if there were people going after his sister, like, then yeah, like,
I'd protect unsuspecting people getting injected in a bar.
Right.
Yeah. So Maguire's quote on the situation with his sister is that two men approached his little sister and asked her where she was from. And that his fiance pointed out the situation to him, and it didn't look like she was doing very well. So we went over and tried to, you know, see what was going on. And then he says, my initial thought was we were getting kidnapped. We get down on our knees, put our hands in the air, and they start hitting us. And they were hitting my leg, saying that my career is over and there's no more football. You will never play again. So I think those quotes are probably a little bit more disconnected than what I maybe set it up in that's the context
like a,
for. But
that's a story like that is it's hard to when the first report came out and it was like he got arrested for his involvement in an altercation outside of a nightclub.
Yeah,
that is a ridiculous story to concoct and be like, oh no, like the it wasn't like a kerfuffle where people are yelling at each other and, you know, somebody throws a bottle and then the next person reacts and punches started to fly. Like, you don't make up hey, my, you know, I thought we were getting kidnapped and everything. And Maguire's side of the story has been remarkably consistent from the first time that we heard anything come from his side of, from his camp, his lawyers, his, and he posted that thing on Instagram a couple days ago that said, like, you know, this the definites are in life is that, you know, the sun will rise, the moon will come out, and that the truth will come out. So he is so adamant and double downing on this. And like, you don't make up a story, hire lawyers and be like, we're going to go to court with this story. What you do is, if you are the provocateur in a fight like this, is you go, all right, like, how do we bend the story in my favor? Like, you know, because you have to basically, you know, especially because if a video comes out or anything, you want to basically be able to say, like, this is the ultimate what happened, but, like, let's spin it in our favor. You don't make up a whole story. Mm-hmm. And he has been, his lawyers have been on it, have been consistent. He has been consistent. That it just seems so hard to imagine that he made this up.
Well, and imagine too, it's 2020. I mean, there's cameras everywhere. So you would like to think if he's got a good head on his shoulders, which I think he does, and a good big old head on top of his shoulders.
He certainly has a head on his shoulders.
Yes.
You know, I guarantee you, if there was a kerfuffle that was noticeable in a crowded place, once again, people probably knew who he was, you know, just the bystanders. There's got to be cell phone footage. There's got to be, you know, mm-hmm. footage inside the bar. I mean, if you're sticking to a story, it better be right, because otherwise, you know, you're going to have egg on your face pretty quickly. It's the internet.
Yeah. And especially if, like, if it's going down, like, oh, crap, like, if Harry Maguire thought that they were getting kidnapped and, like, people look and they're like, these guys are on their knees and these people are kicked, like, I'm not pulling out my phone, because the last thing I want is those guys turning to me and seeing me recording this with my phone and being like, we're going to take that and we're going to beat you up too. Like, so if we haven't seen any cell phone footage, like, that could be that's a very plausible reason as to why.
Yeah. And I think it is worth mentioning that some of the other people who were there, I think there were a couple like Love Island or like reality TV English stars there. This seems like a pretty popular place for English people.
I'm just imagining a portion of the British cast.
And Greenwood earlier that day.
Yeah, Daniel James, I think, was also on Mykonos. But the Love Island crew or whoever I really have no idea. So if you're English and you're listening to this, you can correct me on that.
Was there any Geordie Shore people there?
I don't know.
That's a question for Polly and I, really, just from the challenge.
Yeah, was Kyle there?
The sentiment from then definitely seemed to favor Maguire's story, saying that he was mistreated and there was a total misunderstanding about what was going on and that the Greek police side of the story was not entirely accurate.
If that kind of situation happens where you end up on your knees and they're kicking you saying your career's over and you think you're getting kidnapped, what are you getting kidnapped for? Money. So yeah, like I totally understand him going, I am rich, like I can pay you, like let me go. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it's a plainclothes officer, then you know, you don't realize that it's a police officer, or you know, who knows if these guys were police officers. They probably have their hands in the police officer's pockets, because let's be honest, like everybody has, you know, every cop, somebody's got their hand in their pocket for something, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Payouts exist everywhere. And number two is like just the fact that we move from arrest on Thursday to trial on Tuesday, when Maguire's lawyer said, can we delay the trial so like we actually have time to prepare a defense? And they presented Maguire's side with the evidence and everything at the last possible moment on Monday. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like, hey, this is designed to get a conviction and get money out of you.
Yeah.
I don't know how the Greek legal system works, but if those were plainclothes officers who were then saying that he was trying to bribe them, I think the legal term is entrapment. You know, it just doesn't smell right. That's what it is.
How do you even get a court time for a trial on Tuesday? Like,
what's going on in Mykonos that they're just available?
Yeah. How do they, oh, it's Harry Maguire. Let's put this at the front of the dock. Like, did they even read statements or were they just like guilty?
God, wish we had that swiftness here in the American legal system. My God,
I got reduced to a misdemeanor.
Yeah, which is just another indication that, you know, if an offense was committed, I mean, you know, quotes around a fence. The entire aim of this entire thing was to get, you know, the fine paid and to get his commuted prison sentence, which just means that he pays it off over time.
I mean, where I used to live, you had to go to court if you even had a speeding ticket of 5 miles and over. It wasn't like a reckless driving ticket. You had to go to court for it so that way they could collect court fees. It still took a month. And they had him in and out inside 4 days with a... No.
Wait, when you say the commuted sentence that he got, like, he wasn't going to go to jail.
No, it's... I believe a suspended sentence is maybe what it's called, not commuted.
I think so it's with the Spanish and taxes, where it's like, if you do this again... I bet you Harry Maguire never, ever sets down in Greece again unless it's a Champions League game.
If it was just money, then, like... Because this appeal could take a year and people are saying, like, oh, well, what if it hangs over his head for a year? Like, it's not. He's got lawyers that work on it. The lawyers are just going to update him on the
case. He's probably got Man United's lawyers.
Yeah. But if it's just, like, if it was just money, then, like, yeah, just pay the fine and make him go away. So the fact that he is even more adamant of being like, no, I am, like, clear my name, like, makes you think, like, you know, he knows what he's talking about here.
Yeah. And, Manchester United definitely backing him up on this. They have announced that they are not going to strip him of the captaincy, which I think was the big discussion when all this happened on the sports side of it.
I think everybody who called for that too probably had Bruno as their
First of all, they immediately, it was like Harry Maguire was arrested, and like before you could even finish reading the tweet, people were like, they got to strip him of the captaincy. It's like, hold on. Like, let's wait for the facts to come out. And no, like, I think I saw, like, one person be like, they should strip him of the captaincy. Everybody else in the same breath was like, well, this is the perfect excuse to make Bruno the captain. It's like, Bruno doesn't need to be the captain. Like, and they're like, well, Bruno came in and was a leader from day one and right away started acting like captain. It's like, guess what? Harry Maguire did that too. Like, there's a reason that Harry Maguire started wearing the armband in October. Like, you know... And people were like, well, they shouldn't have made him captain. He had only been at the club for five minutes. And it's like, well, how long has Bruno Fernandes been here?
I mean,
like, at the end of the day, like, you don't need to give him the captaincy. It's fine. You could have multiple leaders in your team. Like, Rio Ferdinand and Ryan Giggs were never officially United captains. And they shared the armband 1 year and they won the Champions League. Like, you could have multiple leaders in your team. That's actually a good thing, not a bad thing. Like, you don't need to be like, oh, we need to give Bruno the captaincy. Like, you know, what if you sign somebody who becomes a leader next year? It's like, do we need to give it to him in 2 years? Like,
yeah. I mean, the team I work for, we have co-captains. I mean, you could just people. There's a difference too between like this is the leader, and then this person just expects accountability and, you know, is responsible for their stuff on the field too. And just, but I guess if there is an argument to make Bruno captain, it would be that, you know, he got all the way up Lindelof's ass against Sevilla. And then look, Lindelof is now defending old women in Sweden. So,
I mean, there's a lot of, he acts like a captain and he has a lot of leadership qualities and he holds people accountable. But, you know, players inside the dressing room were saying that, you know, Maguire came in and within 3 weeks, this was his team. Like, And senior members of the team were basically like, this was Maguire's team. And so whatever we as fans could say about Bruno Fernandes in terms of how he settled in and really grabbed everything, grabbed the bull by its horns, Harry Maguire did that too.
Yeah. I don't think there's an official vice captain right now, but I'm just assuming that it is Paul Pogba. Solskjaer's always kind of said how much he believes in Pogba, you know, he's trying to build this team around it, but also has kind of spoken pretty highly of him in terms of his leadership in the dressing room and helping to refute a lot of those Jose era rumors. And my first thought when it came to stripping Maguire of the captaincy would be to give it to Paul Pogba and not Bruno Fernandes.
I mean, they would do that, but that's for the same social media engagements and everything. Yeah. Like, you know, business will boom.
Well, maybe it is hanging over the head because Raiola's talking about a new contract. So maybe is Paul Pogba the captain season? Like, are we going to make him captain if he signs a new contract? You know, that old United way of saying that, It's
like make that part of his contract.
Yeah, captaincy isn't earned; it's given.
That's like the opposite of what Arsene Wenger used to do. It was his
captaincy given, not earned.
Please don't leave us for Barcelona. Here's the captain's armband.
Yeah, which is stupid because then it doesn't actually mean anything, and you shouldn't necessarily follow that captain. But that's none of my business. Charlie Conway had to earn the C on his chest for the Mighty Ducks.
I love how people like in the same breath will be like, oh, Paul Pogba wants to sign a new contract. Clearly, he's not going to agree to that unless, like, the club have told them of their plans and everything, and he's confident in the direction that they're moving in. And like, in the same,
that makes sense.
In the same breath, they'll
You're
be like,
say Sancho, aren't you?
No, in the same breath, they'll be like, this board is such a joke. Like, how have Chelsea signed a bunch of players and we've signed no one? And it's like, okay, like, relax. There's, you know, if Solskjaer is reported as, like, from what I've heard, he has set a deadline of September 7th, and it's August 27th. There's still time. That seems to be 2 weeks away. And if I'm doing the math correct, I think that's 2 weeks. I think it's 14 days. Or no, 11 days. Almost 2 weeks. You know, like, there's no difference between our preseason doesn't start until around September 10th, which is why Juan Bissaka got back now, so he could quarantine for 2 weeks, because he knew he was going to have to quarantine when he left.
Yeah. This was something he and the club actually talked about, and they were like, you know that you will have to quarantine for 14 days if you go to Dubai.
Right. So this was, you know, it's not like, oh, I have to quarantine now and I'm missing preseason. Like, this is planned. There is no difference between signing a player today and signing a player next week. Like, as long as they come in before the first game, it'll be fine. Everybody, like, let's just calm down.
Yeah, people are just antsy. It's like they're at dinner, and it's been a long time since they last ate, and they didn't get an appetizer of Dan James and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and they're ready for the entree now. And the entree is just going to take a little bit longer. They got to finish cooking it. Chill out, man.
And also, Manchester United players don't even get back to Carrington, I think, until, what, September 10th?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
like, well, they got to get these players in for preseason. And I'm like, well, we don't have preseason. You know, our players are off for 2 weeks, and next week they're all meeting up with their national teams, which United's players are slowly backing out of. But that's fine because they've only been off for 2.5 weeks at this point. And then after that is when the squad will begin preseason, and we'll have about 10 days of preseason before our season starts. And like, that's when, you know, September 10th is when the players need to come in by. And I'll, you know, our first game is the 19th. So I will say the 14th is like the absolute deadline. You know, Maguire arrived 5 days beforehand, that he didn't miss a beat when he stepped in. Pogba arrived around the same time. United didn't miss a beat. It's ideal to get them in by the time you get all your players in, but like, does it ever really affect you on the field? No. And if you want to say, well, Chelsea are signing a bunch of guys, I mean, they're signing a bunch of attacking players and not addressing their areas at the back. Thiago Silva is like a fancy name to distract you and be like, hey, we signed this defender, but he doesn't actually do any of the things that Chelsea need a center back to do. Like, he doesn't win a lot of aerial balls, and they give up a ton of goals on set pieces. They aren't addressing their lack of pace midfield, and they give up a ton of goals on counterattacks. But also, Chelsea's transfer record, just look at it. It's actually like, it's like Ed Woodward's transfer record in the Van Gaal era. Like, it's really bad. I tweeted this yesterday, like, just looking at their last three years of like their incomings, like Christian Pulisic, great signing. Mateo Kovacic, good signing, very good player. Kepa, LOL.
Yo, he actually sucks though. Like, he's hilarious.
Yeah, my dad is a Rotherham United fan before a Man United fan, and Rotherham just signed one of Chelsea's youth goalkeepers on loan, and he texted me, and the text read is like, just signed a Chelsea keeper for Rotherham United. Luckily, it's not Kepa.
Who else we got in here? Jorginho. Solid, but completely lacks pace, and that's why Chelsea's midfield gets overrun all the time. Alvaro Morata. Not even with the team anymore.
LOL.
Yeah.
God, remember when we almost signed him?
Bakayoko. Wow, swing and a miss there. Danny Drinkwater, LOL. Rudiger, he's been okay. Zap Acosta, already at AS Roma. Like,
Emerson.
Transfers are all over the place.
Yeah.
N'Golo Kante, though.
N'Golo Kante, very good, but now he's old. Like, Marcos Alonso, very good, now he's old. And
yeah, if you ask me, they should probably sell N'Golo Kante, probably to another Premier League rival, maybe like, you know, 10, 15 million pounds. Something like that. Sounds to
Inter Miami. Then we get the Matuidi Conte midfield back. Let's do it. Yeah.
That'll be Pogba's retirement club in 10 years.
Well, it's the way everybody gets linked. Maybe it'll be the entire 2018 French national team will be playing for Inter Miami because Griezmann said he wants to play there. Yeah. I'm sure Pogba, if he has a chance to play for, you know, David Beckham, sure, Olivier Giroud probably wouldn't mind spending a year or two in Miami just to chill.
Yeah.
And also, something I realized today, like, the players have been very, very calm. And don't you think the players know something? Like, don't you think the players know? Like, don't you think that Marcus
especially
Rashford,
the English player.
Marcus Rashford, who is friends with Jadon Sancho, would have texted him and been like, yo, what's going on? And Sancho will be like, They're not working out. It looks like I'm gonna stay. Or he'd be like, yeah, it's gonna happen. Like, it's just gonna take time. Like, and we're just, you know, we're waiting it out.
I think Pogba's the big litmus test. We wouldn't hear Raiola saying we're working on a new contract right now if things weren't easy peasy.
Well, there are two things about that. One is, I do think Pogba is genuinely happy, and like, and that would be if United and him were on the same page, like United said, this is what's going to happen. He wouldn't be happy if they were like, actually, we're not sure about our financial situation. So we probably aren't signing people. Then he wouldn't be happy. I think the other thing is that nobody's coming for Pogba. Like, nobody's paying the money that United will want and then going to give him the wages that he wants. So, you know, his hope at one last big contract is with United.
All right, we are going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the news dump transfer rumors today and a certain Argentinian center forward who might be on the market soon. So stay tuned.
Mauro Icardi?
Lautaro Martinez.
Oh, okay.
And we are back. A little bit of transfer news. Manchester United, of course, we've talked about Jadon Sancho a little bit, but rumors throughout the summer or the end of the summer since the season has ended that we are also looking at other positions of need, possibly attacking midfielder, left back, center back, defensive midfielder. And a really intriguing link that happened today was a link to Brescia's Sandro Tonali, who is a player that I, for one, am a pretty big fan of. I think he's 19, 20 years old. Had a very good season with Brescia, who got relegated from Serie A. So they're definitely a club that is looking to probably get him off the books. But he is also being linked to some of the Italian giants, the Milan clubs and Juventus among them.
Well, can Juventus get him now that they just got Weston McKennie?
Yeah, that's true. They signed Artur, and now they're looking at America's own Weston McKennie. So,
central midfield. They tweeted it. They got him.
Thing. Yeah, central midfield is not a need for them.
Weston McKennie might actually play games for Juventus too. He's not like a depth option. He might play.
Yeah. Juventus's midfield is shambles. There's a reason that they put out that kind of money for Artur. But yeah, thoughts on Tonali?
So I've watched like 3 Serie A games a season, so I can't say what he was like in person. What I can tell you is his future stars card in FIFA was disgusting. And if he brings any level of that talent, which I know everybody just turned their ears off after I said that, but his card was sick. So if he's anything like that in real life, our midfield's better for it. So.
Yeah,
I like the idea that we're looking at young players, too. I think that's important. Yeah. It was a point of emphasis last year. It's a point of emphasis this year. You know, Ali isn't necessarily worried about veterans like Mourinho was. So you're going to come in. You're going to get blooded into the squad. And if you hit, you hit. And if you don't, you're gone. And, you know, that's the way we should have been doing it for the last 7 years.
Yeah, if he's anything like his FIFA card, he's got a little bit of Pirlo-esque swag to his game at central midfield, which would be pretty nice behind Bruno and Pogba.
I love Tonali. He'd be great to have in the squad. I can't think that we're in for him. I think we called somebody, whether it's an agent, an intermediary, Brescia, I don't know, inquired, what's the deal with Tonali? Like, what's the interest? And then, you know, that's exactly what it is. You call somebody, you say, what's the interest level? Does he want to join Manchester United? Or, how much money is it going to cost? And that agent or intermediary runs right to the press and it's, oh, Manchester United, they're interested in it. And it's like, yeah, we had interest, but are we actually in for him? Probably not.
Yeah. But CDM still remaining a position of need, it seems, for Manchester United. Nemanja Matic and Fred, both able bodies in that position, but for the most part, I think most people would say that is something we could upgrade on. Another one, though, Chris Smalling reportedly close to a Roma deal, which would possibly add some urgency to our search for a central defender. And I know, Paulie, you were talking about a potential deal for Pau Torres in that position.
Yeah, it sounds like Pau Torres is their number one target there. They aren't going to move on a center back until they wrap up the Chris Smalling deal. It is not a situation where they need to sell. They don't need to sell. They need to clear someone out. It's not a situation where they need to sell Smalling so that they have the money to fund the Pau Torres deal. It's more of a situation of, we don't want to sign Pau Torres and have the Smalling deal fall through and then end up with extra guys bloating up the squad and the wage bill. It is a wage bill thing. We are still trying to trim that wage bill because that's what you have to do, because it was so bloated that it's really tied our hands. That's what happens when you get into bed with Mourinho. Real Madrid and Chelsea had the same thing. They spent a lot of money in Mourinho's first 2 years. The money that they spent on transfer fees went down in year three and went down the first year after Mourinho left. Not transfer fee-wise, not for Real Madrid because they did sign Gareth Bale, but they had to clear God only knows how much off their wage bill to make that happen. They sold a lot of players on bloated wages. Chelsea, same thing. Their wage bill went down in the next 2 years because they just had to trim a lot of fat, and that's what we're doing. We just don't want to end up with Smalling and Torres and a bunch of other players on the team. So if Smalling leaves, then we know for a fact that he's gone. They'll step right in and get that Torres deal done. So much of United's transfers right now are just waiting for the first domino to fall.
Yeah. And the other player we were linked with, Gabriel from Lille, is now officially going to Arsenal. So we are out on that left-footed center back, but still possibly in.
Is he, though?
On this one.
It was announced that it was official on Monday, and it's still not.
It hasn't been announced?
Right. It is not. And, like, it was finally, like, you know, I spoke to somebody last week about this, and it was, you know, if Gabriel wanted to play for Arsenal, he'd be an Arsenal player already. You know, if he's just stalling, waiting for someone to step, you know, until that paperwork is signed, it's not over. You know, Chelsea picked up Willian from the airport when he was going to Tottenham.
John Obi Mikel.
David Silva was just on his way to Lazio and ended up at Real Sociedad. So, you know, I've read a lot of reports on Monday that basically said, all right, no, now he's done stalling. He's made his decision. He's officially going to Arsenal. Like, it's now Thursday evening, and there's been no announcement. There's been no, oh, he went for a medical or anything. Nothing. So, like, what is his deal there? Does he want to play for Arsenal? Because if he wanted to play for Arsenal, it seems like, you know, even Willian, we knew he signed for Arsenal. They were just like, our club photographers are both at an event, so we can't make it, like, we can't do the official signing announcement for another week. But, like, at least we knew that. Like, that news dropped. So, you know, what is it with Gabriel that he's not doing?
I mean, I certainly don't want Gabriel to play for Arsenal. So if that carries any weight, you know, hopefully that can fall through and he'll still be an option. And the last bit of transfer links today, Manchester United reportedly interested as well in Real Madrid left back Sergio Reguilon, who was part of the Sevilla side that beat United in the Europa League semifinal and then went on to beat Inter Milan to claim the club's whatever number of Europa League titles. Real Madrid definitely looking to sell this player. This is one of their many academy graduates that they kind of exported a bit early and are now looking to profit on. But this link is from Marca. So this could also just be another planted story to try and drum up interest elsewhere for the left back, the French left back, I think.
Yeah, Marca is basically a sounding board for Real Madrid. They basically have an office in Real in the Bernabeu. And when I Googled him, the first story that came up was Sevilla don't think they're going to be able to sign the Arsenal target. And then this guy, and I'm like, oh, that's why our name's been dropped. So,
yeah,
hard to read too much into it.
Yeah, but, you know, would probably be an upgrade at left back. I know, Nathan, you've had the chance to watch him a little bit. And also another player that has a badass FIFA card.
Hey, I mean, I like the idea of if a player beats you, buy him so that way they can't beat you again. That usually works. Yeah. Right. I mean, we saw it. Luke Shaw, when he went down, Brandon Williams still has maturation that he has to do, and he will grow into his position. And frankly, at the rate that Luke Shaw goes down, I don't feel comfortable keeping it at just that duo. You know, we got to bring in somebody else. And I mean, my God, if you bring in a starter level quality person that, you know, Luke Shaw is filling in for and Brandon Williams is filling in for, then I just don't see how that's a negative.
Yeah, and this is one of the few players to actually make Aaron Wan-Bissaka look vulnerable this season as well, playing down that left-hand side. And
he guarded Raheem Sterling in three games this season.
Yeah.
And Reguilon is the one who ate his lunch. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And Rashford,
it's an
overlapping
left back, which is different and not exactly Wan-Bissaka's priority. So it's like, still, you know, he's got to be on the winger and then he's got to switch on to the overlapping left back. It's hard. It's hard for me to buy into this because of all the things like that we're saying, like, you know, striker might be, you know, Solskjaer's always said, I'm willing to bring another striker in. Like left back is a position where we're looking for a backup and very much not like looking for a starter. So like, yes, he's good and very reasonably priced, but it's hard for me to believe that, like, all of a sudden that we're just like, oh, whoa, like, we're in for this left back.
We're like the protagonist in a rom-com who's not actively looking for love, but if it were to just appear out of nowhere, we'll take it. That's
it
how we are,
nice.
I think, with a left back starter.
Well, speaking of...
We're just Kate Hudson looking for a man.
Speaking of potential true love falling into your lap, Lionel Messi is reportedly unhappy with Barcelona. I can't imagine why, after their amazing 2019-2020 campaign. But the Argentine dropping this week that he wants to leave Barcelona. And I'm going to preface this by saying I think this is mostly a move to get Bartomeu and the rest of the board out before this election and probably either, you know, get his guys, whoever he wants, in on the board and kind of introduce some of the change. But I don't think we can totally discount Messi's unhappiness and possibly even the lengths that he's willing to go to, you know, get out of the situation that he sees as toxic. But I don't know if that means that Manchester United are even in his, what, top three when he starts looking for a new club, if he starts looking for a new club. And, of course, we would have to compete with our crosstown rivals that have, under their employment, his former boss, Pep Guardiola.
I was listening to a little bit about this on the football ramble this morning on my drive into work, and I'm inclined to agree with Luke Moore. I think there's smoke, and I think there is fire. I would not be surprised if Messi left, just because I think they finally have poisoned the well enough. And I got to wonder, too, like 33-year-old Messi is getting Ronald Koeman coming in saying, like, your privileges are over. And he's probably looking at it going, like, all right, this Barcelona, like, isn't just salary hell. there's no way they can. I mean, they're looking at probably, if they do it right and they do it within financial fair play, realistically, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for them to get back to where they expect to be. So that puts Messi at 35, 36. Does he really want to hang out and, like, blood in a new team? Or, does he want to go win the Champions League? So it's really just a matter of, does it matter to you that much to be a one-club person? Because if it does, then, you know, power to you. I believe in romanticism in football, too. I love it. You know, I wish Wayne Rooney would have stayed at Manchester United for forever just because, you know, he was a legend at that point. But it didn't happen. And I think it's just as likely that, you know, Messi could finally leave. He saw Ronaldo went to, I don't know if you'd say greener pastures, because Juventus kind of shit the bed a little bit there, but...
Browner pastures.
And I mean, the way sporting culture is now, athletes have a lot more influence and a lot more mobility, a lot more ways to make money if they were to move clubs. It makes sense for Messi to, like, tie a bow on it, because they just haven't, you know, since the Luis Enrique treble, you know, they've been winning the Farmers League that is La Liga, because Real Madrid haven't been competitive in that league for a couple years now. And so it's just like, you know, he can move. Whether he's going to move to Manchester United, I don't think that's going to happen. It makes sense financially for us because, you know, we're a shirt manufacturer, and Adidas, I'm sure, would be like, would help us pay for that transfer if they needed to, because if they could print Messi Manchester United shirts, that, I mean, that's a huge amount of money coming into their
contract. He is an Adidas athlete.
Yeah. You can see it now, the Leo Messi / Trident, like, or Red Devil.
What instrument does he play?
Yeah, right.
So, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's a lot more likely that he goes to a city, or I think it'd be kind of fun if he were to reunite with Neymar at PSG. I certainly see that move making sense. I'm sure PSG would love it. I think that also probably means Tuchel's out and they're looking for a new coach. If they're going to spend that much money for Messi, there's no way they can't. They have to be winning the Champions League
at that
year.
Point, right?
Yeah. So,
well, why would they fire Tuchel?
Because he lost.
I kind of think they might fire Tuchel anyway.
I think it's just a knee jerk thing. If you want to look at it as a glass half full person, they made progress. They got knocked out by a shitty Manchester United team last year, and then they made the championship.
How can you call it shitty? They had Lukaku, Pereira, McTominay.
Heath Chong was in that game.
Diogo Dalot.
Fred. Like Fred when he was bad. Eric Bailly started at right back.
Yeah. The Manchester United team that you turn on when you're playing your little cousin and you want to make it interesting, like, that team beat PSG last year, and then they went to the Champions League final this year. So, like, any sane person would be like, that's progress. But I just think with the amount of money that gets doped into that club, that's not progress, because they're expecting to win that tournament. Especially against the Bayern Munich team that pretty much, like, they just kind of coasted through that. I mean, PSG had their chances, but I wouldn't say Bayern was...
Lose. They had a 100% record.
Yeah, I mean, Bayern, like, just... I don't really feel like they had...
29 games.
Yeah, they didn't really have squeaky bum time moments, though. I mean, they just controlled that, and it's like...
Yeah,
they have the better midfield and probably a slightly better defense, but, like, PSG's front three is the best in the world, probably.
Well, Nathan, overcoming a 1-0 deficit in the Champions League final against Bayern Munich is not for everyone.
Right.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, they left Mauro Icardi on the bench and brought in a guy who didn't cut it at Stoke. So, classic. But, I don't know. I think City, PSG, those are probably the only two clubs that really could afford him. I think we can afford him. But if I were to sling out a hot take, I don't think he's worth it.
He's not worth the transfer fee that he would demand.
Well, even on a free, like, I mean, the amount, if he expects to make the amount of money that he makes, if he expects to make the amount of money that he's making at Barcelona, it is not worth it. I don't think it's worth it. I mean, you would mess up after the 2 years that we went through fixing our salary situation. If you bring in Messi, like, that's Alexis Sanchez's deal on steroids. All the image rights that you have to pay for as well. I mean, I just don't know if it's worth it for a 2-year loan of Messi on the back half of his career.
And expecting him to, like, carry us to a title, which, like, he couldn't even do in La Liga this year. which is La Liga, you expect him to, yes, he'd have a, probably a better supporting cast at United than he did it at Barcelona, but you expect him to walk into the Premier League and carry this team to attack. Because the Barcelona for the last 2 years has been 10 shit guys stand around and wait for Messi to do Messi things.
Yeah, it's... I just think you're taking a lot of risk for the amount of money you'd be spending to bring in a 33-year-old. It would be, I think it's a similar situation as Zlatan. As much as I love Zlatan, I am on the record saying that he's one of my favorite signings we've ever had, but it wasn't like the best move to sign him, and sure as shit, he blew out his knee. What do you think is going to happen to Messi when he's playing at Turf Moor? Like, Burnley's going to kick the shit out of him, and then there's always that chance
if he goes to City, hurt. Like, I really hope that, like, Premier League refs just make it, like, open season on Messi. Like, sorry, you're not in Spain anymore.
Oh yeah. I think if Messi goes to City, I'm totally out on him in terms of, like, the level of respect that I've had for him.
But, like, he's not choosing to go to City. He's choosing to go to Pep.
Yeah, but the things that Pep and City have come to represent over the last couple of years in this modern game of ours.
Sport washing? Right,
but like,
covering up human rights violations?
Yeah, those are the two teams that you just named. It's Qatar or the UAE.
Yeah, no.
So, because, you know, they're the teams that can afford him.
But why not pay for Trump-backing Malcolm Glazer? Is it Malcolm Glazer? Yeah, it's Malcolm Glazer.
I mean, he's a rich American, so I'm going to automatically assume he in some way backs our fearless supreme leader.
Oh, he 100% does. He's on the official records of, you know, spending money to help support him.
I mean,
isn't Malcolm Glazer dead?
No, that's Avram, isn't it?
No, Malcolm was like the patriarch, and then Avram and
Joel. I feel like we should know this, and maybe we should edit out.
Joel's the only one that matters. Joel's the only one that runs
Look,
the club.
I mean, if you're a rich dude in America, like, it just makes sense to support Trump. I think we've all established that. I mean, the owner of the Jaguars, Khan, supports Trump. Like, what?
She does, because they pay no taxes.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
people, and that's it. And the greatest thing they did was, we're veering off course here, but the greatest thing they did was convince everybody else that, like, we're on your side. Like, no, you're not. You're just in it for money. I think Messi, I think there is some smoke and fire to that he wants out of Barcelona. You see that package that was reported that City offered 100 million plus Gabriel Jesus plus Bernardo Silva plus somebody else whose name is escaping me. Like, if that's the kind of thing that's going to take, you know, United don't have assets like that to swap. Like, you'd have to swap Rashford and Martial and Bruno Fernandes, and then it's like, well, why would you get Messi here? Plus 100 million. Because Messi's trying to leave for free, and Barcelona aren't going to let him. They're going to dispute this. They're going to take it to court. By the time that this clause, unless City come with this massive offer, by the time, you know, this thing gets sorted, the transfer window will be over. But, like, even then, he's not coming to United.
Yeah, that Barcelona team would be sick, though, if they had Bruno and Martial and Rashford. Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah,
I'd
buy those shirts.
United. Yeah. United have Bruno and Martial and Rashford, and they have Paul Pogba and Scott McTominay.
Yeah.
The French connection.
All right. So, final question, since... this was kind of an impromptu recording, and we had a lot going on this week. We didn't monitor for a fan question, so I came up with this one. Of the other Barcelona players, not named Lionel Messi, that could be involved in this fire sale, is there one that you guys would take at a reasonable price?
I would take Dembele if he came cheap. If he came for, like, nothing, and we knocked his wages down, I would take him. Because if he stays fit, oh, God, is he good.
Well, that's kind of a big question, isn't it?
a two-footed winger who can play everywhere? Yeah, that would be pretty nice.
If you're putting him on reasonable wages and he's coming for nothing, you know, like, maybe do, like, a pull of Bayern Munich. Like, get him on loan. Like, you're trying to shed this guy and shed his wages, etc. Like, we'll take him on loan, and if he works out, then maybe we'll pay you something for it. And if he doesn't, we'll send him right back.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Longley is one of the only guys who's, like, they said, no, you can't have him. So that's disappointing. I mean, I said it in the break. I wouldn't hate Jordi Alba.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just for two or three years before his legs give out on him. I mean,
how old is he?
I think, is he north of 30 now?
Oh, his legs are giving out next year. You're not making it through like a condensed season post 30 and not having your legs.
Colin
give
said
out.
Reasonable.
Jordy price. Alba is 31 years old.
Oh,
Colin said reasonable out. Price, which would be very cheap for a 31-year-old left back who might have one last year left with him.
Might. He might. Like United are one of the better teams for this season because they don't have 30-year-olds that we're relying on, whereas like Arsenal are relying on a 31-year-old Aubameyang, and they signed a 32-year-old Willian. Like, you think that they're going to be able to play a 10-month season in the space of 9 months? Like, get out of here.
I mean, honestly, there's just not – and this is the problem that Barcelona is finding itself in. There's just not a lot of dudes that I am bending over backwards for, you know? On reputation, I would, but they're
Messi
all
both, man.
they're just all past it at this point, you know. Like Arturo Vidal 5 years ago would have been nice. Rakitic 5 years ago would have been nice.
Gerard Pique.
Yeah, well, we had him a bunch of years ago, so he'd be nice to have when he was in his prime. It's just Barcelona is just in that situation. They're like the Miami Heat a couple years ago, where they just realized that, like, wow. We went all in on the one player, and we have all these veterans, and now we're stuck with it. And the guy who was leading the team wants to leave. So that's what they got to deal with. They got to rebuild.
I've got one for you guys that might make you guys puke. But he is 28, and he had a decent season on loan at Bayern Munich.
Oh, he's going to say Coutinho.
Philippe Coutinho on loan possibly at Manchester United.
I mean, Mance got yoked at Bayern Munich, so...
Yeah, they're eating dumbbells over there in Bavaria.
Bro, we talked about needles earlier.
It's not financial doping, it's just actual doping.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I lost weight when I went to Munich, just walking around. I don't know how they gained that much weight. And just, like, pure muscle.
Yeah.
Just working out and eating doner kebab all day. Yeah.
But, I mean, the idea of Coutinho playing for Manchester United and actually doing well is enticing, both in its, you know, depth that it provides us at creative midfield and winger, and also in the anger that it might cause Liverpool fans.
Well, I mean, he would just be like a really juiced out version of Grealish, where it's like, we could play him at the 10, could play him at the left wing, but he's just, like, better.
And who takes more long shots that would annoy Polly than Jack Grealish would.
God, can you imagine Bruno and Felipe Coutinho just kind of like teeing off for each other? Like, all right, it's your turn to kick it from outside the box.
Oh, man, get Gareth Bale on the right wing and you got a prime front three.
We're done here.
Team artillery strike, dude. Let's do it.
Yeah. Then we need to get Paul Scholes in as Paul Scholes coach up those long Rangers.
All right, now Brent says we're done.
Yeah, well, we are about done. We're at an hour and 9 minutes now, and this is my first episode back in a couple weeks, so it was nice to see you guys again. This was a nice break from gestures at everything.
Yeah, been a pretty shitty week, I think, if you're a person with empathy. So glad we got to have a chat and I could forget about the world for an hour and 9 minutes.
Yep. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. We are going to have another couple episodes up next week and hopefully then some transfer news to talk about. So, I've been Colin.
I've been Nathan.
Auf Wiedersehen.